NPR.
Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Dan Hoost is here from Sullivan County Government with news from the county legislature, including a special legislative session next week to address a critical sales tax extension and the next open meeting of the Sullivan County Drug Task Force. On the latest episode of Curtain Call, our new theater podcast, Tom Candela talks with Harold Tai of the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop about their upcoming season. And this May, as we honor mothers, remember sacrifice, and celebrate heritage, culture reporter Valerie Manzi sits down with the author of Sayonara Cowboy about his deeply personal journey and his memoir, featured alongside the documentary Fall Down 7, Get Up 8 this weekend at the DVAA. That's coming up, but first the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Stocks opened lower this morning after President Trump threatened new tariffs on European imports and iPhones. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average sank about 340 points in early trading.
In what's become a familiar pattern, President Trump took to social media this morning with new tariff threats, sparking a sell-off in the stock market. Trump says trade talks with the European Union are going nowhere, so he's threatening to impose a 50% tax on imports from Europe starting next month. The president's also threatening to slap a 25% tax on iPhones unless Apple agrees to build the devices in the United States. Smartphones and other electronics have so far gotten a pass in Trump's trade war. Stocks were already under pressure this week as the bond market recoiled from rising government debt. Higher bond yields lead to higher borrowing costs. Mortgage rates inched up this week to 6.86%. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Harvard University is again suing the Trump administration. This follows the administration's decision to revoke the university's ability to enroll international students. The administration claims Harvard fosters anti-Semitism. Harvard alleges the Trump administration is retaliating against its right to use the First Amendment. Eight migrants deported from the U.S. who were supposed to go to South Sudan are now being held in the East African nation of Djibouti. They'll stay there for at least 2 weeks and comply with a U.S. court order. NPR's Jasmine Guards reports the White House has been complaining that courts are trying to control its foreign policy.
The migrants are from Myanmar, Laos, Vietnam, Cuba, and South Sudan. Earlier this week, lawyers were told they were being deported to South Sudan. At a hearing in Massachusetts this week, Judge Brian Murphy said the Trump administration was in violation of an injunction that prevents people from being deported to countries other than their own without a chance to voice fears for their well-being. Murphy ordered that the individuals be given at least 15 days to challenge their deportation. At her daily briefing, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt confirmed the migrants will stay in Djibouti and accused Judge Murphy of threatening U.S. diplomatic relationships. Jasmine Garst, NPR News, New York.
Federal officials have charged a suspect from Chicago in the killing of two diplomats from the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. The two were leaving an evening event at a Jewish museum when they were shot and killed. The diplomats, Sarah Milgram and Yaron Lashinsky, were a couple. Friends say they were soon to be engaged to be married. Marion Wabat was a friend of theirs and remembers Lashinsky as a man of peace.
When I think about Yaron's legacy, I will forever think of him as a diplomat on par and a peacemaker at heart.
Lashinsky was a dual Israeli-German citizen. Milgram was an American citizen who grew up in Kansas. On Wall Street, the Dow was down 330 points. This is NPR. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that President Trump has the power to fire key federal agency members if he disagrees with them. The 6-3 decision overturns a 90-year-old Supreme Court precedent, but the High Court did say Trump cannot fire the head of the Federal Reserve, who can only be fired for cause. The Senate now has the multi-trillion-dollar spending bill that squeaked by in the House yesterday by a single Republican vote. It widely expands President Trump's tax breaks and slashes spending in other government areas. That includes cuts to federal nutrition assistance or food stamps. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimates this will balloon the deficit to nearly $4 trillion. On this unofficial kickoff to summer, a record number of people are forecast to travel. Most are driving this holiday weekend. As NPR's Amy Held reports, gas prices are at a four-year low.
AAA projects more than 45 million people getting away around Memorial Day. 40 million driving. Regular gas is down about 40 cents a gallon from last year, now averaging about $3.20. 3 years ago, it was over $5. Jonathan Peoples is in Lincoln, Nebraska.
We are thankful that the gas prices are dropping because it gives us more opportunity to go out and explore, you know, and just see things more.
And despite air traffic control problems, AAA projects more than 3.6 million people are flying. Barbara Slavens is at Chicago's O'Hare.
This is crazy. Oh my gosh. When I walked in, I hope we can make our flight.
Holiday air travel forecast to rise almost 2% over last year. Amy Held, NPR News.
And I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, supporting books, radio, podcasts, film, television, theater, and more to bridge science and the humanities. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. It's Friday, and every Friday we're joined by Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government, with news from Monticello. Good morning and happy Friday.
Good morning. How are you, Tim?
I'm good. I'm glad that it supposedly will stop raining tomorrow. Fingers crossed.
You're going to be held responsible if it doesn't.
But also glad it's Friday. There was no meeting yesterday of the legislature as scheduled.
No.
But there's a special meeting of the legislature that's coming up next week. What's that special meeting all about?
It's actually fairly standard. It's just that we finally got the needed state legislation going through. To renew our sales tax rate. The sales tax rate on goods and services that are applicable in Sullivan County is 8%. State gets 4% of that. We get the other 4%. But because I think it's higher than a certain threshold, I wasn't able to talk with the person I needed to this morning to get the full details, but we have to every few years authorize an extension, basically it's called, of that sales tax rate. So that's what the special meeting is for. People are invited to come to it and listen to it, but it'll probably be a very short meeting. I don't see any legislators saying, no, we don't want to extend the sales tax. That's a major revenue driver for the county and offsets property taxes to a degree. So the state will pass it on their end for their part, and the county will pass it on our end for our part, and we will go on from there.
Another meeting coming up is an open meeting for the Sullivan County Drug Task Force. Let's remind folks what the Drug Task Force does.
Yes, this is a task force involving all sorts of people and agencies from across the county. It brings them all together, not just county offices and personnel, but also police departments and rehab centers and individuals who are helping with the opioid issue in Sullivan County. They get together, I think, quarterly, and at least once a year, sometimes more, they have a public meeting where they specifically invite everybody to come interact, not just sit there and listen to what they're talking about, but actually you can talk to the people about it. And especially if this is a situation that concerns you, really meet the people that are at the forefront of handling this and perhaps get involved. So it's going to be on Monday, June 9th, from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center in Hurleyville.
And do you folks need to register, or is it all sort of open?
Nope. You can just come and show up. There is a Zoom link available upon request to our organizer of it all, Camille O'Brien. If you're interested in Zooming rather than coming in person, you can email her at Camille, that's Camille.O'Brien, O-B-R-I-E-N, at SullivanNY.gov.
And there were some statistics out recently about showing that there's been a decrease in the number of drug-related deaths in the, well, statewide, I think, and I'm not sure how it applies to the county.
Also in Sullivan County, although, again, Sullivan County, if it's not at the top, it's close to the top of per capita rate of opioid overdoses. So it continues to be a big issue that we are focusing quite a bit of resources on. People may not necessarily know that because a lot of it happens behind the scenes, but you can come find out at this public drug task force meeting.
New York overdose death
dropped 32% in 2024. The data showed that's the most recent data that the CDC has issued. So it looks like it's still a continuing crisis, of course, but the trend is moving in the right direction.
Our team feels more energized than ever because we do feel like we're making progress.
World No Tobacco Day observed locally coming up. When is that day and what's happening for that event?
Yes, this is something that actually is officially celebrated on May 31st. But our Coalition for a Vape-Free Sullivan, which includes county agencies and offices, will actually be observing this on May 30th. And we're going to actually do it in a cool way at the O&W Rail Trail in Hurleyville. You're going to hear a lot of things happening in Hurleyville in the next few minutes here. There's quite a few things we have going on. At 2 o'clock, the legislature will make a proclamation in support of World No Tobacco Day. And then starting at 2:30 and running till 5:30, there will be a quit party on the rail trail. It says on the poster, start your quit with cessation support from community resources and a fresh air walk on the O&W rail trail. Throw out your last cigarette or e-cigarette at the event and receive a free quit kit. I keep trying to say quilt kit, but it's not a quilt kit. It's
that's
a
another day. It's another celebration.
That's right. So the first 10 quitters to sign up for a freedom from smoking class get a $50 Walmart gift card. So there'll also be a student art exhibit all day, airing Big Tobacco's Dirty Laundry, it's called, and that will be in the ballroom of, once again, the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center. So all in that location from 2 to 5:30 p.m. on May 30th, it will be a party going on.
And just a note, tobacco use kills more than 6 million people globally every year, and I know there have been efforts in Sullivan County, specifically through Sullivan 180, to educate youth about the dangers of tobacco. And they've been really trying to start there to just try to show folks how problematic and what a public health crisis this really is.
Yeah, try to stop it before it starts.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Dan Hoost. He is the communications director for Sullivan County Government, joins us every Friday. RSVP has been rebranded. They're now called Sullivan Volunteers. RSVP was I forget what it stood for.
The Retired Senior Volunteer Program.
Oh, right. And now you've opened it up to folks that are not just seniors.
Right. Yes. It was sort of making lemonade out of lemons. The RSVP program lost its funding and ability to operate from the federal government. And that meant that none of us can use the RSVP logo or name or anything. That was all trademarked. However, our Office for the Aging, which runs that program, said, listen, this now means we can open it up to people who are under 55, because RSVP was open just to those who are over 55. And that includes being able to provide reimbursement for mileage traveled to a volunteer site, also covering you with liability insurance. So we have rebranded as Sullivan Volunteers, complete with a new logo. Just put out a video on social media about it yesterday with our Sullivan Volunteers coordinator, formerly our RSVP coordinator, Monica Rosa, and our Office for the Aging director, Lisa Ann Duell, who excitedly talked about it at a volunteer fair that we had last Saturday that Radio Catskill was at as well.
Yep.
So we are going to really be promoting this even further. We have videos of every table, including Radio Catskills, that I'll be posting soon. And just telling people there are all these interesting volunteer opportunities out there, and we could make it maybe a little bit more worth your while than you could before. I mean, it's still volunteerism. Let's face it here. You're doing this as a gift to the organization, you know, providing your talents at no cost. But maybe you can get reimbursed for the mileage that you travel to that location. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a real nice benefit. So we're going to be promoting the you-know-what out of this Sullivan Volunteers, because not only will we be helping all the agencies and organizations in the county that need volunteers, but we also have volunteer needs at the county ourselves. So it's exciting. I'm looking forward to how we actually expand the program beyond what we knew it to be.
I'm no marketing expert, but I will say that I think Sullivan Volunteers tells folks kind of exactly what it is versus the previous acronym, because I don't know what RSVP really, and I didn't know what it stood for. I had to ask you.
And Monica created a great little logo as well in the county's official color of green. And I just think we're going to be able to open it up to people who have never been able to participate before and really encourage, as I was at a young age, to volunteer, to give back to your community. Because if you, just like with quitting smoking, if you start that message early on, it lasts for somebody for the rest of their life.
And we were talking at the top of the segment about weather. It's a sign of the summer warmer season, even though it may not feel like it, when Lake Superior State Park opens, and that's opening up tomorrow as scheduled.
It is, yes. Actually, I just put out, too, because I just found out yesterday, our Delaware and Hudson Canal Linear Park down in Summitville is also opening tomorrow. So it's the official start of the summer season in Sullivan County, even if it doesn't feel like it. And these popular parks, along with all of our other ones, will be open this weekend. But Lake Superior is staffed and actually now transitions to a paid admission. It's $5 to get into the park, or $15 for a season pass. But boy, what you get for that $5 or $15. We have a beach with a lifeguard. Don't know that it'll be open tomorrow. Maybe not tomorrow. But we also have a boating, paddle boats, kayaks, canoes, or you can bring your own and put it in the water as long as you've got life jackets to provide, or we can give you some. We've got a picnic pavilion. We've got a whole bunch of areas for kids to run around, and we've got hiking trails there. The D&H Canal Linear Park is open all year long, but the Interpretive Center will start its operations tomorrow. This is really hidden gem of Sullivan County, down off Route 209 in Summitville, which is just north of Wurtsboro. And it's basically a mini little museum. We're technically not allowed to call it a museum by the state. That's why it's called an interpretive center. But you and I would recognize it as a museum with artifacts from the canal, which started operations 200 years ago. And parts of it, including in right next to the interpretive center, are still intact. And you can walk around outdoors with interpretive panels. But the Interpretive Center itself actually has a staff member there that you can interact with, a nice little bookshop, and that thing everybody loves, restrooms.
You know how to promote these things. Monday, 68 and partly sunny, so maybe that's the day.
I would say so, there yes.
Go. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more from Dan Hoost, including some upcoming events in June, coming up next month. Mm-hmm. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Jason Dole reminding you Radio Catskills Music Yard Sale is tomorrow, 10 to 3, right here at Radio Catskill Studios. If you're looking for vinyl, we've got it. Records, LPs, 45s, 78s, plus audio equipment, turntables, cassette decks, reel-to-reels, and CDs, cassettes, 8-tracks, everything musical, price to move. Something here is meant for you. Cash or Venmo accepted at the Radio Catskill Music Yard Sale. Don't miss it. 10 to 3 tomorrow at Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty.
Donna Fellenberg here. On Catskill Character, my guests Ariel Schanberg and Bill Fellenberg will be at the DVA this Saturday at 2 o'clock presenting Coming to America, The Untold Stories of Japanese War Brides. The film, Fall Down 7 Times, Get Up 8, will be screened and discussed, and we'll talk about it on Catskill Character. 10:30 Saturday on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Let's continue our conversation with Dan Hoost, Communications Director from Sullivan County Government. Already talking about Memorial Day weekend, and now, of course, already talking about June, some events coming up in June. Household Hazardous Waste Day. Always a big event.
Say that three times
Household
fast.
Oh. This is where the county is accepting those things that have been sitting in your basement or garage for some time. You keep thinking, oh, I'm going to get rid of those, but I don't know how.
Yeah, usually this is the thing you get most excited about that I talk about every year.
I don't know why this is not a national holiday, but okay.
Yeah. So, yes, Sunday, June 8th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., our Monticello Transfer Station, that's the one next to the old landfill off of East Broadway in Monticello, will be accepting for free, no pre-registration required, all sorts of household hazardous waste. We want it carefully packaged to prevent any reactions or spills or leaks. And, of course, you're going to have to bring your photo ID or other proof of county residency, because it's only open to Sullivan County residents, only open to homeowners and property owners, not commercial businesses. We can accept paint, solvents, stains, inks, pool chemicals, acids, wood preservatives, fluorescent bulbs, mercury, and any devices that contain mercury, pesticides, batteries, smoke detectors, fire extinguishers, cleaning products, poisons, roofing tar, bases, adhesives, creosote, stale fuels, antifreeze. But we cannot accept your other regular household garbage, ag waste, medical waste, radioactive material, explosives, ammunition, anything larger than 5 gallons that's a liquid, LP or gas tanks, electronics, tires, refrigeration devices, or bodies.
Gotcha.
Darn it.
So when I say we can't accept that during this collection event in the free pre-registered, but there's very likely a way that we can help you dispose of it otherwise. Radioactive material might get a little tricky, but talk to us about it. We could probably figure something out. But tires, electronics, and stuff like that, we can take it
other ways. They take it other places. Yes. But this is a good day to like do that that cleaning event that you've been saying you're going to do and get rid of all that stuff if you've been meaning to.
That's why we have it. No pre-registration, no charge. Bring it on over. Just make sure that it's safely packaged.
June 8th. The senior care ambulance service starts in June. Let's talk about how this is supplementing the current EMS abilities in the county.
Yeah. Well, we've been contracting now for about a year with senior care to do those 4 fly cars that you like to think are cars that can fly. But they just fly down the roads. They have made a major difference in being able to respond to emergency medical situations throughout Sullivan County, and we have them going 24/7. What our EMS and 911 folks have found, though, that it's much more difficult to get an ambulance because we can't transport in the fly cars. And ambulances, they're otherwise engaged in other calls or doing a lot of transport between healthcare facilities, or just the corps are having trouble getting volunteers so that they can staff up an ambulance to be able to come out. So sometimes a call for mutual aid goes through as many as 5 different volunteer corps before we actually can get a rig on the road. So there are things that, you know, we need to address with that, because if you're suffering from, example, of a heart attack, you can't be waiting an hour or more for help to arrive. The fly cars have helped towards that, but now with $275,000 the legislature has put aside, they're going to be funding from June 15th to September 15th, the busiest time of the year, a ambulance that will be available 16 hours a day, 7 days a week throughout Sullivan County to be able to do these kinds of transports.
And the legislature is still considering other options to solve the overall issue of the EMS service in the county.
Yeah, there was a discussion of this is going to be an advanced life support ambulance, so it can do all the stuff, the fancy stuff, but there's basic life support as well. They were talking about doing that 24/7 all year long, but that was going to be nearly another $1 million, which there's no outside funding for. That would be a tax hike coming to taxpayers. That may be still down the road. Mm-hmm. They haven't ruled that out. But for the moment, they said, let's see how this works with this ambulance for 16 hours a day during the busiest few months of the summer.
Back to Hurleyville. As we mentioned, there's a lot of things going on there, including the Rome event, June 7th and 8th. That's on the ONW rail trail.
Yeah, this is really interesting. This is something that our very diligent and adventure-minded planning division has put together. It is a multi-day walking adventure along our rail trails. It's not just in Hurleyville. It's also down in Wurtsboro, basically throughout wherever we have ONW rail trails to hike. We are going to actually be doing it with groups, and we are going to be providing free lunch for anyone who has registered either Saturday, June 7th or Sunday, June 8th. You can find the details on our website or on our Sullivan ONW Rail Trail Facebook page, and that's also where you can find the link to register, just so that we know that you're coming. This is something put together by our ONW Rail Trail Alliance, which includes, like I said, our planning division. I think our parks folks are involved in it as well. And it's for all ages. It's a way to really promote our trails, especially at the start of that season that we all enjoy walking in, summer, once it stops raining, of course. So,
And then there's a free rabies clinic coming up at the Morningside Park Pavilion in Hurleyville.
Yeah, which, I was going to say, where do you think that is? Hurleyville's where it's at these days. Guess, so, yes, our public health department is going to be doing another one of their free rabies clinics for dogs, cats, and ferrets Wednesday, June 18th. From 6 to 7.30 p.m., that's Wednesday, June 18th, 6 to 7.30 p.m., Town of Fallsburg's Morningside Park Pavilion, which is off Brickman Road in Hurleyville. You need no pre-registration required, but you need to bring your photo ID as proof of Sullivan County residency. And you just have to also, of course, make sure that pets are in a carrier or on a leash so that we don't have any situations there. And then they can get either a one-year or three-year rabies vaccination.
I love how ferret made the cut.
Yeah, I don't know how that all works, but they seem cool to me, but I think they're a little stinky. So
Please don't. The International Ferret Society, please don't call and complain.
I think they're cute.
They're cute, but okay.
But stinky. So are cows.
Well, you know what's always fun about having you on a Friday is that we get to laugh a little bit, but you also get to bring in some recognition for some of the great work that the civil servants in the county do for the county. And one of those is Public Safety Commissioner Alex Rao, who was given an award recently. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of Alex's. I've known him for most of his time with the county. I did not realize until a few years ago that he's also a leader and longtime volunteer in the Livingston Manor Ambulance Corps. But he was nominated for and won the Harriet C. Weber EMS Leadership Award, which is given out by the New York State Department of Health to someone exhibiting longevity, innovation, dedication, responsibility, executive and management skills in establishing, maintaining, promoting, and expanding EMS organizations, agencies, and committees at the community and state levels. Alex has done all of that. It's not just a part of that that he has done. He is the Deputy Commissioner of Public Safety for Sullivan County, overseeing the Bureau of EMS and our 911 center, where he has long been. He's also, as I said, the leader of the Manor Volunteer Ambulance Corps. He has been a key figure in everything from like these ambulances and fly cars that we're talking about to making sure that our communication system, our towers, are 21st century ready, technologically capable, switching basically from analog to digital. That was an over $10 million project. And I'm just hitting the high points. He does so much for this county. Congratulations to him.
Congratulations to him. And of course, we've been talking about Memorial Day as the unofficial start of summer. But really, it is one of the days where we honor and mourn the U.S. military personnel who died while serving the U.S. in the armed forces. There are plenty of memorial services planned throughout Sullivan County beginning tomorrow.
Yeah, there's around 24 of them. And they start tomorrow, Sunday, and then, of course, Monday, Memorial Day itself, when, for example, the county will have its official service at 1 p.m. at the Veterans Cemetery in Liberty. To my knowledge, there is not an event this year at the Government Center in Monticello. A lot of people have been asking. That was never an official county event. There were local groups that would rent they would reserve that space. I don't think there'll be anything there, but there are plenty of other places to go. I will be going to Grahamsville's flag exchange ceremony Monday morning, which is fascinating to watch. But listen, whether it's a parade, whether it's a somber ceremony, whatever it is, take some time to do this. It's important. And it means a lot to the other people who are there as well to see that there are folks who are taking time out of their schedule when they could be barbecuing or doing something else, quote, fun, to actually take some time to remember those who gave everything in the service of this country.
And, you know, if you go to SullivanNY.gov, there's a long list from places big and small where folks are all coming out to honor our military veterans. If you're listening to us outside of Sullivan County, check your local government or town information for those events that are coming up this weekend.
It's a great community building exercise. It really is. So,
Dan Hoost, thank you so much. Any holiday plans besides the one you just mentioned on Monday morning?
I turn 50 on Tuesday.
What? Happy birthday.
So I will be celebrating, if you can call that, birthday. Thankfully, my nephew, who is turning 12, has his birthday day before mine, so we can focus maybe more on how exciting 12 is going to be.
Well, for what it's worth, you don't act a day over 12.
Okay. I actually do take that as a compliment. Thank you very much.
Dan Hoos, Sullivan County Government, thank you so much. And happy birthday to you, sir.
Thank you. I'm going to go, I don't know, race Matchbox cars or something.
We'll see you next week. We'll take a break. And when we come back, more Radio Chatskill after this.
For the next Jazz Night in America, vocalist, guitarist, icon George Benson joins us for an exclusive conversation about his early years, his favorite tracks, and his new Lost album, Dreams Do Come True.
I've never been afraid to try something new, things that even surprise myself.
I'm Christian McBride. Join me Sunday at 8 here on Radio Catskill.
This week on Science Friday, the story of biochemist Katalin Karikó, whose research was dismissed. A decade later, she won the Nobel Prize.
If you want to do something, you know, you find a way. And if you don't, then you find excuses.
Plus, a medical sculptor making hyper-realistic body parts for physicians and nurses to train on. That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today, from 2 to 4 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, earlier this week, most school districts in the Hudson Valley saw their 2026 budgets approved. From the New York Public News Network, WAMC Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Jesse King has this roundup.
Statewide, nearly 97% of proposed school district budgets passed, according to the New York State School Board Association. That was largely the case in the Hudson Valley, even in some districts where passing the budget meant surpassing the state's tax cap, like in New Rochelle and Mamaroneck. Both districts passed budgets of nearly $360 million and $169 million, respectively. In Rockland County, the Clarkstown Central School District got the thumbs up on a roughly $265 million budget. Superintendent Dr. Mark Biacco says the spending plan includes a tax levy under the cap at 2.45%. Despite a late state budget and looming questions over federal funding, he says the budget process was pretty smooth this year.
We were very happy. We got a 76% margin of approval, so it was very good. We're very happy and thankful to the community for that.
There are a few districts where proposals didn't pass. In Putnam County, the roughly $145 million Mayopac Central School District budget failed by just 59 votes. In Ulster County, voters approved a $63.5 million budget at Onteora Central School District, but they rejected a tax-neutral $70.5 million capital project to redevelop its main Boyceville campus. The plan would have prepared the campus to absorb Woodstock Elementary, which the board plans to close by 2028. Other districts in Ulster County, like Saugerties, New Paltz, and Kingston, all passed their budgets. Kingston voters also selected three trustees for three-year terms on the school board. Stephanie Kearns, president and CEO of the United Way of Ulster County, is joining the board as a newcomer, along with incumbents Marie Anderson and Stephen Spicer. She says she wants to focus on strengthening communication and student equity at the school district.
I think parents are also differently engaged than they used to be in a child's education, and just ensuring that we're really hearing that voice clearly and making sure that's part of the overall decision making. I think everyone wants that and desires to understand how to translate that into real action and commitments that we're making as a board.
At the Liberty Central School District in Sullivan County, voters approved a $68.5 million budget with no increase in the tax levy. They also said yes to a $7.5 million capital project that Superintendent Dr. Patrick Sullivan says will add air conditioning to a list of renovations already planned for its elementary school. State lawmakers passed legislation last year capping classroom temperatures at 88 degrees, requiring schools to create extreme heat plans and put measures in place by September 1st.
Having univents and air conditioning access for 40 learning spaces in the elementary school right now will be more cost effective in the future compared to retrofitting it after we complete the bigger project.
Sullivan says the budget otherwise continues efforts that have long been in the works at Liberty, including an in-house IT department, a new curriculum mapping platform, partnerships with Siena College and Syracuse University, a podcast club, and an esports league.
Most importantly, this budget allows us to continue on the path that we've been striving towards while maintaining our commitment to fiscal responsibility.
In nearby Livingston Manor, the new Rockland Central School District, formed by a merger of Roscoe Central and Livingston Manor Central, passed its first budget, worth roughly $32 million, with a 5% drop in the tax levy. Changes in the foundation aid formula mean some districts saw more or less aid this year. Back at Clarkstown, Bayako says his district saw a slight increase, which he's happy with, although he notes Rockland County Schools missed out on a potentially helpful regional cost index adjustment in the calculation awarded to schools in New York City, Long Island, and Westchester County. Bayako says this year's budget focuses on capital improvements, mental health programs, community partnerships, and security upgrades.
As with all school districts right now, our focus is on school safety and just making sure that we are constantly keeping up with the sort of latest technology out there in school security.
School districts where proposals failed can put a budget before voters again on June 17th. In Poughkeepsie, I'm Jesse King for the New York Public News Network.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the latest episode of Curtain Call with Tom Candela. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFRadio.org.
Tonight on The Mixtape, we're kicking off the summer season and previewing some of the amazing CDs at tomorrow's Music Yard Sale. Join me, Jason Dole, in for Jason Tugaw with selections by Madonna, Bjork, Bowie, Stereolab, Corner Shop, and many more. And after the show, those discs go back in the bin for you to find at the sale. Start your holiday weekend with Radio Catskill on The Mixtape tonight at 7 and at the Music Yard Sale tomorrow, 10 to 3.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Curtain Call is our new podcast focusing on local theater, and it's hosted by Mr. Tom Candela, who's here right now to talk about the latest episode, which drops today.
As the kids say.
Yep. We were talking in the break about all the great folks you have coming up. You've got a busy day of talking to folks at NACL.
Correct. That's right after this, the 11 o'clock today.
Yeah.
I'm coming into the studio, and then tomorrow I have another group coming in, and everyone is really, really anxious to be on the show and are enjoying the conversations, because we really do have a great conversation. It's not just like a question and answer interview.
Right.
It really is sitting down and talking with these folks and finding out more about them and their company.
And part of what makes it really good is your passion for theater, which is
absolutely
why we're doing it. Yeah, and because you have this passion in this area. And there's so many great theater companies in our region. And it's great to be able to sit down and hear you guys talking.
Right.
You know, if you're a regular listener of podcasts, what makes those things really enjoyable is the dynamic between the people that you're talking about for the most part there. Who do you have today that we're going to
preview? Today we have members from the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop, Mr. Harold Tai.
Harold.
Yes. Who happens to be a board member, a director with many of their productions. He's also the treasurer. And Pete Nastasi, who is also a performer, director, playwright, and contributes in that way. And we sit down with them today and talk a lot about their vibrant programming, particularly their audience participation program, where they're actually inviting audiences to come and see some of their one-act shows or their 10-minute plays. And the audience, after they watch it, they get to comment on the production, offer their input, and then they take that input and they put it into the production. So it's audience participation actually helping in the creative process. So we talk a lot about that. And then, of course, we talk about their upcoming productions. They're doing Sister Act, which is opening just in a couple of weeks' time, a big-time musical. And they have a new young audience, not really young audience, young performers, and young audience is certainly invited to it. They're doing Beetlejuice Jr.
Oh, fun.
So there's lots of stuff going on over at the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop, and it was a pleasure to sit down with these two gentlemen and talk about it.
All right, let's take a listen to an excerpt of today's episode of Curtain Call with Tom Candela
and
the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop.
And today we're headed to the heart of Sullivan County to shine a spotlight on an organization that has been a cornerstone of local theater for decades now, the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop, with a full season ahead that includes musicals, stage readings, comedies, and a production for young audiences. My guests are Harold Tai, one of the dedicated board members helping to shape the vision of the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop, and Pete Nastasi, who happens to be one of the playwrights, directors, and is also involved in acting in one of their shows. So let's talk a little bit now, because this is a very important part of Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop, and that's your play and development series. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to you, Pete, first on this, because you are participating in that. How did that idea come about to begin with?
Interesting you should ask that. My wife and I, we patronize a number of theaters, not only in Sullivan County, but also in Ulster, Shadowland, and another theater in Rockland County called Penguin Rep. And four times during the summer, they do staged readings of new plays and with audience participation. And then after the reading, the lights come up and they ask for feedback from the audience. And I always enjoyed attending those things. And so I said, that would be a really good idea for us to do as well. And so I pitched it to the board. They were receptive to the idea. And so we looked for submissions from only local playwrights. And by local, I mean Sullivan, Ulster, Orange, maybe expanding that a little.
Okay.
And that's pretty much how the idea came to fruition.
The past 3 or 4 years, we've done what we call the 10-minute play festival, where everything was short plays, and we'd do 8 plays on a weekend, and then a different 8 plays on the second weekend. We just took whatever the playwright gave us, and we had a reading committee, and we chose the plays, and nothing was done specifically to the plays. And here we're giving our patrons a look at how a play gets from inside the writer's head to on a stage somewhere.
Okay. So they really get to see the development of the play.
Right. Hence the charm. And I would be negligent not to mention the co-producer, an instrumental person in the workshop, a woman by the name of Jean Eifert. Jean Eifert is fairly new to the workshop, but she's been in community theater for a number of years. And I've often thought that a community theater such as ours really should be an incubator of new works, giving people an opportunity to write, to participate in any aspect of theater, and now bringing the community into this to essentially be our adjudicators. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the fact that they would want to come and see the finished productions in September, that they had a part of. They have some skin in the game, in essence.
And Harold, when you made these selections, what was some of the criteria you were looking for?
Well, we were looking for original ideas, good writing, something that had potential that was of interest. I mean, you're talking about a 10-minute play. You got to be very concise and very, very stingy with your words as a playwright.
Mm-hmm. So you do the show, the audience is there, lights up, and you start questioning. Is that how it works?
Pretty much. It's presented, lights go up. And I think the first question I'm going to ask is, what did you like about the play?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, what didn't you like about the play? Were you able to follow the plot? Were the characters believable? I would like the audience to be able to ask the playwright, the director, the actors questions, get some feedback, and even ask the audience questions as well. A whole give and take, and I think it's going to be a great experience.
I want to make sure that people know when to come out and see these shows that you're doing right now. You're in rehearsal. When can people actually come and see and participate?
The staged readings took place May 16th, 17th, and 18th, and we had a good response. And now we're incorporating those comments that the audience has made. But the finished plays will be September 12th through 21st, Friday, Saturday, Sunday,
two weekends. Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be a fully staged play, no scripts in hand or anything like that. It'll be...
And incorporating the feedback you receive from the audience.
Especially incorporating that.
Correct, yes.
So if you participated in these 10-minute plays, one-act plays, and you gave some comments, some of your comments may very well have made it into the final show, and come out and see it, come out and participate some more. Now we're going to get more into productions coming up this season that everybody can get out there and see. And we're going to start with Sister Act, because that's the one that's going to be opening really soon, correct?
Yes.
That opens up in
June 13th.
Mm-hmm. So how did you choose this particular show, Harold, to present to our audience?
Well, we had one of our directors pitched it to us, and she said she's got a lot of great ideas for it. She has a degree in theater, you know, with an emphasis on direction and musical theater. So Alexis Costa is her name. And so we chose Sister Act. There's lots of singing and dancing and a very family-oriented play. So that opens June 13th, and as all of our shows do, it runs Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for 2 weekends.
Are you using live music, or are you
we have a pit orchestra.
Great.
I believe it's an 8-piece orchestra. And the vast majority of them are music teachers, and you know, most of them have played professionally, you know, during their college days or, you know, since then. And fortunately we have a pretty good cast.
And how can we get tickets?
You can go to scdw.net for all of the shows and get tickets there.
Well, let's talk about some of the other things that you're doing. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Bells, B-E-L-L-E-S, right? Is that the
correct? B-E-L-L-E-S, yes. It's written by a guy named Mark Dunn, and this is, as he says, it's a story told in 2 acts and 45 phone calls. And what it is, it's 6 sisters who live in various parts of the country, all over the country, and one of them still home, having moved back with Mama, who is, you know, now an older woman, and all the things that go along with having an older sure. parent. And so there's all this drama and comedy, and it's just a hilarious play. It really is. But it's also poignant. You know, Charlie Redler is our director. He's a 30-plus year theater teacher from South Florida. Bells opens July 11th, runs through the 20th. And then I think it's the first Saturday of the run, which is, I think, July 12th. Mm-hmm. We'll be doing a benefit performance of Bells for the Literacy Center of Sullivan County.
Right. All right. We're going to go now to your Beetlejuice production, because now this is for the younger audiences, correct?
Right. Our youth theater group, they chose to do Beetlejuice Jr. this year. Mm-hmm. And we feel that they are good enough that we put them in as a main stage. It's a 60-minute version of the stage play of Beetlejuice, and it's based on the movie. And they will open August 8th on the main stage. So this is a step up for our youth theater group. Mm-hmm. So August 8th, 9th, and 10th, and 15th, 16th, 17th, again, Friday night and Saturday night at 8 o'clock, Sunday at 2 o'clock. Their weekend.
Okay. Let's talk about the Haunted Theater coming up in October. Tell us what that's about.
We take you around. There's about 25 to 30 scare stations, as we call them. It's different every year. If you went last year, it's going to be different this year.
So you don't know what to expect.
Don't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. And it's actually our most popular event. We get more people at that than any other time. And just like last year, we expanded it. It's Friday and Saturday nights. The doors open at 6. Last tour goes in at 9:30, 9:45. And Archie, the theater ghost, as we call him, he's our host. So, and he's in there somewhere.
And you got to find him. And that goes again when? October?
Every Friday and Saturday in October.
And finally, for those in the community who want to get involved with the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop, how would they go about doing that?
You can go to scdw.net, which is our website, and scroll to the bottom and go to the webmaster, okay, SCDW webmaster, and send us an email and say, hey, I'm interested in volunteering, and somebody get back to you usually within a day or two.
Also, areas of expertise, someone would like to, you know, if we need a plumber at any point and donating those services or electrical. Anything like that, anybody, all hands help.
Right. So it's very important for folks to get out there, not only to participate by going to see these shows, but there's many ways you can contribute and become part of the Sullivan County Dramatic Workshop. Gentlemen, I want to thank both of you for for taking the time out today and coming on Curtain Call and sitting down and having this conversation.
Thank you so much
for having us on.
And thank you for being part of Curtain Call.
Thank you.
You can hear the full episode of Curtain Call at our website, wjffradio.org. Just go to the shows tab and click on podcasts and you'll find it there along with our other podcasts. We'll take a break, and when we come back, reflections on motherhood, memory, and multicultural identity with a special film screening at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance. This is Radio Chatskill.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, our guest is Anna Malaika Tubbs. Her new book, Erased, What American Patriarchy Has Hidden From Us, investigates gendered systems of oppression and what makes their American version unique. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
It's Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Tomorrow, the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance presents a compelling program that intertwines Mother's Day, Memorial Day, and Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. It's a documentary called Fall Down 7, Get Up 8, The Japanese War Brides. It sheds the light on the lives of tens of thousands of Japanese women who came to America as war brides after World War II. At the heart of the event is author William Yukikazu Fellenberg, whose memoir Sayonara Cowboy dives deep into the personal legacy of that migration. He's the son of an American GI and a Japanese war bride, and he's joining the DVAA program to share his story of navigating cultural fractures, confronting racism, and ultimately foregoing a sense of belonging. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi sat down with Fellenberg.
Good morning, Bill, and welcome to Radio Chatskill again. How are you?
I'm fine. Really appreciate the opportunity. How are you, Val?
We're very good, and I'm excited to be talking to you about this event you had a hand in organizing that is happening at DVAA Saturday the 24th from 2 to 3:30, and it's a documentary film. What is the name of the film, and what is it about?
The film, it's a short documentary. The title of it is Fall Down 7 Times, Get Up 8, The Japanese War Brides.
It's a
compelling documentary that's set at the end of the war, and it follows three Japanese women who were brought to the United States by their respective GI husbands right after the war, and their experience in adjusting to, well, you'd have to say it's an entirely different world.
Yes, we can imagine that, because in reverse, it would be an entirely different world.
Right.
And going into a different world is filled with tons of challenges.
Very much so. And each, there's three women that are followed in the movie. And I should point out that Fall Down 7 Times, Get Up 8 is a title that's taken from an old Japanese proverb that speaks to the need for resilience in terms of troubling times, that you fall down 7 times, but you get up 8.
Something we all could be very, very mindful of.
Absolutely. Yeah, it applies to us all in many, many different situations. And I guess it's really part of the rubric of success in life and that sort. When you fall down, you get back up. But it's not easy for these three women. Although they go through many difficulties, it's really a compelling and inspirational short movie that I think speaks to everybody.
And you'll be reading from your book, Sayonara Cowboy, about your experience. And for those of our listeners who haven't heard about your book, can you tell us a little bit about it and about yourself?
Of course. In conjunction with the film, Val, I'll be reading excerpts from my memoir, Sayonara Cowboy, about a particular Japanese war bride, my mother, Sachiko Takano Fellenberg. I was born 3 years after the end of war. That would be in 1948. And before that, my mother had met and married my father, William Kip Fellenberg. He was a GI in the occupation of Japan immediately following the war. We came to America when I was 4 and a half. That would be in 1952. So after procedural hurdles to get us here, we settled in New Jersey. And unlike the three war brides that are followed in the documentary, who stuck with their husband, the experience that my mother had, and I attributed to the isolation that she was feeling, and I guess just the stark differences between her experience in Japan, of course, was one of being a girl, a high school girl, that would have seen her whole city and her whole world put up in flames, really, as a result of the napalm bombings in Yokohama. But I'm kind of muddling all these different issues together, and maybe it's emblematic of what my mother's experience was, because by the time I was 8, she went back to Japan.
And these stories will be the stories of other women who had other issues and remained here. And we'll hear about the ups and downs of their lives. And we'll also be hearing from their daughters, or are we only hearing from their daughters?
No, they're one of the several of the daughters. There's three of them that will be commenting on the film and commenting on their mothers and interviewing their own mothers about their experience in terms of their adjustment. Because the situation that I described to you about my mothers certainly applied to them as well. So it's extremely interesting. I think that it's a program that invites people to enter a seldom visited corner of our nation's history in terms of post-war Japan and post-war America. I thought it was an event that really ties into three things, really, and that the month of May, we're still in the gravitational pull of Mother's Day, where it's also Memorial Day. It also ties into the GIs who married these women. And it's also the end of Asian American Heritage Month.
It sounds like a very timely event on Saturday, May 24th from 2 to 3:30 at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance in Narrowsburg, New York. The event is entitled Coming to America, The Untold Stories of Japanese War Brides and Their Families. Thank you so much for your role in bringing this event to our community.
And thanks to Valerie Manzi for that conversation with William Fellenberg. And before we go, a reminder, a program note, a special program note. Tonight on the mixtape, our own Jason Dole is sitting in for Jason Tuga. And Jason Dole will be playing a curated selection of CDs and music from our music sale. You don't want to miss that one. And all those CDs and all that music will be available for sale tomorrow at our music yard sale. That's here at our Liberty Studios at 10 until 3. We've got all kinds of great vinyl CDs. We've got equipment. We've got music stuff, price to move. It's our music yard sale tomorrow at 10. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York,
an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year. NACL.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
On the TED Radio Hour, Harvard Business School professor Amy Edmondson says giving negative feedback to employees is the kind thing for bosses to do, even if it doesn't seem nice.
Nice is the easy way out. Makes me comfortable in the moment, but it doesn't take care of you and it doesn't take care of the future.
Ideas about making teams work. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Generally cloudy today, slight chance of a rain shower, high 50, low 42 tonight. And for the weekend, it looks like the rain's moving out of the way, a slight chance of a rain shower tomorrow with a high 52. Honey, a high of 60 and mostly cloudy on Sunday, and 68 and partly sunny for Monday.